about Matiako, the agenda before us will be followed as such, except that I'm not even going to make an input because we are already late. So we'll quickly go to apologies and then Sheku apologize. Secretary.
Good morning, honorable members. We've got apologies from Honorable Kopane and Honorable Sosewa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take this time to welcome Honorable Phillips. He's going to take us through his proposal that seeks to amend the Executive Members Ethics Act of 1998. We are now going to give him time to take us through his proposal, and then once he has done, our responsibility today is to ask, you know, clarity seeking kind of questions and be sure that we have heard what he was briefing us about, and at our own time we'll go into the deliberation. So may I appeal to members not to tempt us to start the deliberations today. Just get the clarity and then we will take it there. It's over to you, Honorable Phillips. You may take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation. The document before you it's got six sections, and I'll just work through them very quickly. The background for me presenting these proposals is that there's a growing list of the President's family members and friends who have reportedly benefited from business deals with the state since he assumed office. A 2010 Mail and Guardian report indicates that the combined business interests of President Zuma and his 15 adult members of his family accounted for 134 company directorships or memberships of closed corporations. And I want to just state here that there's absolutely no objection to that whatsoever. In fact, if we are focused at growing our economy and dealing with joblessness, we need people to be involved in opening companies. So I don't have a problem at all with the President's family being involved in business. The next point is what concerns me. Of these 134 company directorships, at least 83 were registered in the post-Polokwane period and are linked to industries in which the state plays a key role, such as mining and telecommunications. And then there's a whole list of questionable deals that I'm happy to answer if you need any specifics about them, but I'm not going to go through each one of them. On number two, the heading is questionable deals. This is where the problem lies, Chairperson. All these deals were done either without tenders or through dubious tendering processes, and that's not an assertion made by me. It's a finding being made by the Auditor General and other compliance organizations. In some instances, the inexperience of the company linked to a Zuma family member has had a detrimental impact on service delivery and on the workers. And I think the Aurora mine is one of the classic examples of how the workers actually were really prejudiced by the incompetence of one of the successful tenderers or successful applicants of taking over a state enterprise. And then point number three. There's a summary of the proposals that I'll make to amend the Act. This private member's bill proposes a number of amendments to be made to the Executive Members Ethics Act. These amendments include the following. Decisions regarding the adjudication of conflicts of interest involving the President, his children and spouses should be made by the Public Protector. Currently, the President adjudicates these issues himself, and we believe that that in itself is a conflict of interest. You can't have somebody standing in adjudication of their own affairs. So we believe that this should be done by the Public Protector. The second one is that state deals involving the President's family members should come under specific scrutiny by the Auditor General to ensure that all tender processes are followed and that there are no special favours. Now, in this instance, we believe it would be in the interest of family members of this President or any future President to be safeguarded from the assertions that they were successful in securing tenders because of their connection to the President, And we just need to ensure that there is no untoward practices in the awarding of those tenders to family members. And then under 3, Section 3, the summary of the proposed amendments to the Act, I propose the following. The public protector should adjudicate whether the President has complied with Section 2 of the Executive Ethics Act, which deals with general standards of ethics to which members of the executive must adhere. Currently, the President is supposed to adjudicate whether he himself has complied with Section 2 again. We find this a conflict of interest in itself. We also believe that the President's register of interests be made more easily accessible to the public. Currently, members of the public wishing to view the register have to arrange a viewing with the President's office. Now, I wanted to do that, Chair, some time ago, and I had to get someone to go to Johannesburg to sit in an office. They weren't allowed to take photographs or make photocopies, but they could sit there and they could transcribe everything that was in the register to write it out manually. And a person sat there the whole day. Now, my position is that if somebody can do that and has to go and sit in a room and actually write out what is in the register, we could just as easily publish the register. And that if we make it accessible to the public, then it's even more transparent. Because it is accessible, but it's unbelievably laborious to go and do something like that. I also continue and say that the legislative amendments proposed by the DA will, if implemented, put in place important safeguards to limit the scope of presidential influence peddling. When it comes to the President and his family, the highest standards of transparency and accountability should apply, and that would set the example for the rest of the country. The people of South Africa shouldn't be left guessing whether President Zuma's family, or any president in future, is trading on the President's name. We should be absolutely sure that they are not. Now, dealing with the particulars, Chairperson, I propose that legislation be drafted dealing with the following particulars. That the following clause be added to the end of Section 2D of the Executive Members Ethics Act. And I quote, in the case of the financial interest disclosed by the President in terms of paragraph C, the public portion of the President's financial disclosure must be available on the Presidency's website no more than 30 days after the disclosure has been made to the relevant official in the office of the President. And, Chairperson, this is applicable only to the President's declaration of interest, not to that of his extended family or his family, because we do respect the fact that family members can participate in the economy of this country. But as a public representative, the President should make his declaration public. The next amendment is that the following be added as an additional clause, clause E, to the Section 2 of the Executive Members Ethics Act, that we require that gifts and conflicts of interest declared by the President must be adjudicated by the public protector. Now, once again, we propose this because of the independent status of the public protector, and also we believe that you can't have somebody standing in adjudication of themselves. And that we add the following clause, clause F, to Section 2 of the Executive Members Ethics Act. We require that the President must, to the satisfaction of the public protector, meet the criteria outlined in Section 2.1 of the Executive Members Ethics Act Code, General Standards, and that in deciding whether the President complied with the provisions of Section 2.1 of the Executive Ethics Code, the public protector must take into account the promotion of an open, democratic, and accountable government. So once again, we are proposing that the public protector make an assessment whether the actions or compliance of the President to Section 2.1 of the Executive Members Ethics Act is promoting open, democratic, and accountable government. The next change, that we add Clause G to Section 2 of the Executive Members Ethics Act, that we require that the Auditor General takes measures to ensure that state deals involving any of the President's family are scrutinized to ensure that correct tender procedures have been followed in each case. And as I said earlier, this would be in the interest of those family members of any President and this President doing business with the state, that they could, without any ambiguity, confidently say to the public of South Africa that they won the tender or the right to do certain work in an open, transparent fashion in a competitive environment. Okay, Chairperson, Chapter 5 are the objectives of the proposed legislation, and I've dealt with most of them as I spoke to them, but I want to just conclude by saying that President Zuma and any president's position affords them significant power, which makes their family and friends influential by proxy. The potential for the individuals closest to the president to be favored in state deals is considerable. The purpose of these amendments is not to target a specific individual or a specific president. Rather, it's about ensuring that state resources are allocated on the basis of fair tender procedures, not on the basis of political connection. The DA proposes that amendments be made to the Executive Members Ethics Act to ensure that the following broad issues are dealt with. One, or A, that the ease with which the public can assess the President's declaration of interest is improved. B, that the President's compliance with the General Standards Ethical Conduct as outlined in Section 2.1 of the Executive Members Ethics Code is adjudicated by the Public Protector in the same way that all other members of the Executive must meet the criteria outlined in Section 2.1 of the Executive Members Ethics Code to the satisfaction of the President or Premier as the case may be. C, that the adjudication of any gifts of conflict of interest declared by the President are adjudicated by the Public Protector, who is an independent body, in the same way that the President or Premier, as the case may be, adjudicates conflicts of interest or gifts declared by the members of the Executive. D, that state deals involving the President's family members should come under specific Auditor General scrutiny to ensure that all tender processes are followed and that there are no special favours. In conclusion, Chair, there are no financial implications, no significant implications stemming from this proposed amendment or foreseen. However, there might be some small costs regarding the public protector's adjudication of any of the declarations made by the President, but these would be seen in the line of the public protector's duty in that person's office. So, having given the background to the motivation for these amendments, Chair, and also the fact that there are no considerable financial implications, I propose that these amendments be considered by your committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Solif, and there you are, Honourable Member. It's time for you to get clarity, if any, of the presentation was not clear. Any member will come to. Thank you, Honorable Kuba.
Thank you, sir. My apologies for arriving there. Just to ask, looking at the presentation, Honorable Kuba, the proposal seemed to be going to extended families beyond your immediate families as per the current requirement. Why specifically the proposal to go to extended families, while all public representatives, all of us, would be or are required to declare based on our immediate families? Wouldn't it be unfair to the President to be singled out and everybody else left to be declaring for their own immediate families? If you can just clarify that. Or is the intention as well to go broader to all of us as public representatives?
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I think that's something that this committee would have to deliberate about. Nowhere in this document do I talk about extended family members, but what I do talk about is the President, and it's, as I said, it's not focused on this President, it's for future Presidents too, that the President is in a position of considerable power to influence outcomes of any nature. Therefore, all I'm saying is that I don't expect the family members' financial interest to be declared. All I'm saying is that if family members do secure tenders with the state, that the Auditor General should adjudicate whether those tenders were awarded according to the prescribed tender processes. Because the illustration that I gave in the document of certain tenders that were awarded that were found to have been non-compliant is what concerns me. So I'm not exposing the President's family or extended family to any undue scrutiny unless they do business with the state. And then we believe that as the head of state, he should be setting an example of transparency and making sure that none of those deals are secured because of the position of that President.
Honourable Mbak.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Tolip, says he is even referred this to the future president. But my question is, why are you naming the family of the president, the current president, whereas you are saying you are even referring to the future president, but you have written names here, you have mentioned names here that are the relatives of the president. Why? So to me, it's like you have a problem with the president as a person. You are not referring to the future president, because if you were referring to the future president, you are not supposed to mention names. There are names here, Khulubuse Zuma and others. Whereas you are saying you are not referring to this president as the president, Honorable Jacob Zuma. You are also referring to the future president. If you are not referring to him, why do you mention names of President Zuma's relatives?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member. You see, I mentioned these people because all these issues that I've given in the preamble to the motivation to this proposed amendment, these instances of family members that I've given their names of, are instances where their dealings have been found to have been secured outside of the tender requirements. A classic example is Nonkululeko Mhlongo, who is the mother of two of the president's children, was awarded a multi-million rand catering contract by the KwaZulu-Natal legislature in 2008. The tender was awarded without being advertised in the tender bulletin and before the expiry of the 21-day review period for tenders. Now, I use these to illustrate why I think Parliament should be considering making these amendments for future presidents. I use them only as an illustration, and I have to use current illustrations to motivate my point, because these people have been implicated in unprocedural winning of tenders. Now, I don't do it out of disrespect to the president or his family members. I'm using them as an illustration to motivate why I believe we should be making these amendments, so that we safeguard the president and future presidents by making legislation that is applicable to the head of the state.
Before Mopilis, I'm sure the point that Honorable Mdaka was raising, if you look at your presentation, it is sound fair on the background to illustrate on that. But going into the real presentation, that's where I'm sure it's you know, making her to understand the way she's doing, to say, are you then saying if it wasn't President Zuma, we wouldn't have considered this proposal? I'm sure if you look at your presentation, on just to take an example of on the summary of proposed amendment act, you keep on again, instead of, you know, emphasizing issues to that, summary of proposed amendment to act. On three, you again, you know, I think on the background, I do understand why you emphatically, you know, emphasize that President Zuma, but I'm sure that's where his concern comes from.
Chairperson, I apologize for that. Section three, I do, when I'm talking about the summary, mention the president by name, but where I talk about the particulars of the proposed amendments, you will see that I refer only to the president. And throughout, I only refer to the, where I'm talking about the particulars of the proposed amendment, I only speak of the president. I don't mention anybody by name. Therefore, when this committee considers my proposal, you will consider making these amendments where we only talk about the president, because legislation doesn't talk about individuals. It talks about a principle, and it talks about positions, but not individuals.
Follow up, Dan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would be very, very happy if the Honorable Tolik can withdraw these names. Can withdraw, and then we talk about the president here, not the relatives of the president. Because to me, who's dragging the dignity of the president of the country. It's unfair. Purposes. If we, I would propose that we consider this after withdrawing all the names, then in the next committee meeting, he can present his document. Thank you. Not with his name.
Your point is noted, Honorable Mapili comes back and followed by Italian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need clarity on a background where it says background one, I think it's page one, where it says of these, at least 83 were registered in the post Polokwane period and are linked to the. I just want to. For clarity's sake, because here Mr. Frontby said post Polokwane period, I just want to find out what was happening before Polokwane period, the time of President Thabo Mbeki and the time of President Mandela. Did he ever look an issue like this? To the previous president, I just need clarity on that.
Chairperson, I didn't. And I'm sure that if I went and scrutinized, I'm sure if I did go and scrutinize and what happened prior to 1994, I would have found objectionable and questionable practices too. This proposal is applicable to this term of office that I'm serving in Parliament. And I use Polokwane as a time period, because that is when the president of the country also became the president of the governing party. And I'm referring to these first two chapters, chapters 1 and 2, where I can't withdraw the names, because I'm using them for purposes of illustration, and I can back up those examples with facts. I can back those up with facts, because we've done the research about the facts. So I'm using them to illustrate. But from chapter 3 to chapter 5, 6, I'm very happy to remove any references to the president. The chapter 1 and chapter 2, I can't remove the references. These are the motivation for this proposal.
I thought the question of Honorable Pelusa was to check on your research prior to where you are, to say how far have you gone to, because they were making that we cannot make legislation. In fact, even yourself, you said legislation based on an individual, it should be something that you talk about the principle of, you know, an operation of a structure you are talking about.
Chairperson, I thought I did answer that. I did not go further back than Polokwane, but that period is the period that I've been in Parliament, and that is the period that I considered, and I'm considering this legislation proposal or amendment for the future. So we could look back forever and find very many questionable and objectionable practices of the past, and even legislation that was passed in this Parliament that was found to be profoundly unacceptable post-1994 was passed by this Parliament. So, you know, I don't think it will help anybody for me to go back 100 years in parliamentary practices of what happened with presidents. This is about what's happening in South Africa now and what I'm proposing to prevent the abuse of office happening in the future.
Honourable Kerrier.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to remind you of what you said when you started. You said we should engage and question for clarity. And now you have allowed some discussion that is really not clarity-seeking issues. So I just want to make that point so that we understand each other, what are we working with, et cetera, and what is the basis of engagement with the Honourable Brother. My question relates to the issue of tightening up on ensuring accountability and transparency and avoiding conflicts of interest. And if we look at the Act, it's very clear. Section 2B, etc., stipulates some details. However, I just wanted to ask Honourable Trollope, if we look at the Act, since it relates to provinces as well, has the time not perhaps also come to evaluate the position of premiers and to include not only in the tightening up of the legislation to also look at the role of premiers in provinces. So that we say where specific, yes, I fully concur that it is necessary to make sure that the president is not player and referee of himself. So therefore it makes sense that there's another body that scrutinizes certain deals, etc. But when it comes to specific the role of premiers, is it not necessary to also look at a possible phasing in of additional measures to curtail similar practices that are also taking place on provincial level? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think when I was making the presentation, I referred to the public protector having to adjudicate in the instance where the president adjudicates themselves. And I made mention of the fact that premiers do the same thing. I think that if your committee considers these proposals favourably, that if it's applicable to the president, it would then also be applicable to a premier, because the premier has the same provisions in this act that they would adjudicate on issues pertaining to themselves. But if it's then applicable to the president, it should also be applicable to the executive leadership in the provinces.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm asking you to differentiate a clarity seeking and a question, because mine was a question. I mean, was a clarity seeking, so that when we ask questions, we must be clear about all this. So mine was a clarity seeking. Are we discussing the current president and his relatives, or are we discussing the president and the future president? That was my clarity seeking, so that if I want to ask a question, I must ask a question, a clear question.
My apologies as well for arriving late. I just want to find out from Honourable Trollope whether the issue of the public protector being the adjudicator and to some extent the Auditor General, did you look at the fact that this would actually change also the mandate of the public protector, because it's extending the public protector's mandate? It's not something that is reported to her, it's something that is actually now done as a matter of process. And then in terms of, I just want to understand clearly what this is trying to achieve in terms of the Auditor General's involvement in looking at the tenders of a president in this process, and whether the principle of fair tendering is not sidelined in that process. Is what we should address, not rather the correct adjudication of tenders in total, than having the Auditor General and his office focusing on the awarding of specific tenders, whether there are questions around it or not?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, yeah, there would have to be, if your committee considered these amendments favourably, there would have to be an amendment to the mandate of the Public Protector. And I propose simply the Public Protector as an independent authority to do the final arbitration or adjudication on the matters pertaining to the President. Your committee might find somebody else more applicable or pertinent. It could even be the Deputy President, for that matter. But I am proposing that the adjudication must be done by somebody else other than the affected party, because you can't effectively adjudicate issues pertaining to yourself or fairly do them. So, yeah, there would have to be an amendment made to the Public Protector's mandate, and I don't believe that that would be too difficult to achieve if this committee considers the Public Protector to be the appropriate person to do that final adjudication. With regard to the tender process, my motivation uses some examples to highlight how the tender process or supply chain management process of this country has already been undermined in this current office of the President. And I use salient examples to illustrate that yes, our supply chain management and tender processes are some of the best in the world, but the applicability of them is sometimes there's some shortfalls and shortcomings. So I don't believe that that is a final guarantor of proper procedure. So I'm saying that if we put our president under specific scrutiny, or the president exposes him or herself to specific scrutiny to set the example of transparency to the rest of the country, it can only be of benefit to the rest of the country for the future of South Africa.
So moving towards concluding this session, you are confirming that the law relating to procurement, it's fine. What remains to be seen is how do we implement what the content of the law is saying. The same thing goes to Code of Ethics 2.2b. I'm sure all Roman figure 1 up until 5. Don't you see this as clear indication that if they were to be adhered to, we wouldn't have the things that you were talking about, because it speaks of the cabinet, the ministers, the MECs, and what have you. I'm sure you'd agree with me that the president, as the head of state, is also equally the head of cabinet. When you said cabinet, you also include him. Are you not saying this one, Roman figure 1 up to 4 or 5, can do well if they are properly adhered to?
Chairperson, no doubt. And that's why I'm not proposing to amend the Act as it is. I'm proposing to change the Act. I'm proposing to make some additions and minor amendments to the existing Act. But the part that you refer to, Code of Ethics 2B, is applicable. It includes the provisions prohibiting cabinet members, deputy ministers, and MECs from doing all the following things from Roman 1 to Roman 5. It doesn't specifically speak to the president. That's why my amendments are focused specifically on the president, to improve the contents and the provisions of this Act to be applicable from the president right through the executive to MECs and premiers of provinces.
If our consideration was to say if an amendment has to be considered, we include saying president, cabinet, and what have you, will you then say that this is covered your concern?
Chairperson, I really wouldn't like to undermine my own proposal, because my own proposal is very specific to family members of the presiding president. So I don't want to undermine the proposal that I'm making today. I think consideration of adding president to 2.2b will make the Act better as well. But I would really like you to consider the proposal that I've made applicable to the president and his family.
Thank you very much. I think everybody is now clear what the briefing is all about. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much for giving yourself time to come and clarify yourself and make us better understanding your proposal. You are free if you wanted to do other businesses of your day.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you to your committee members for giving me the opportunity to make this presentation. And I thank you for the questions and the interaction. I believe these kind of processes can only strengthen our constitutional democracy, and I'd like to thank you sincerely for the opportunity.
So you will keep abreast by the determination of the committee at its last determination.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, honourable members. May we then move to Van Rieden. I can't try that. So we have been having this particular proposal for quite some time. You may just to recap that we have went through it. We had the presentation from Bosman. We went further to call the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development They sent their officials from Mpumalanga. They gave us their understanding. What was left in our own understanding was that they couldn't notify this member about the provisions of extending applying for the extension to his, her own remaining 9 months to conclude the 10-year second. I'm sure that's what we should now arrive at, what is the position of the committee. Can I then invite members to take over? Honorable.
I just want to make sure that I have the right agenda. For some other reason, I have received an agenda with a date of the 19th of October, and I don't know if that was just perhaps, is that the correct one? What we just
yeah, I know that last week. Thank you very much for making sure you are with us. We don't left you behind. Honorable Pretoria.
Chair, I'm just trying to bridge the gap in my own mind about this whole thing. I was not here last week, so I'm not sure what happened then. But if I recall correctly, at some stage we asked, we took a resolution to write to the petitioner from Frieda van Oudtshoorn via the petitioner, Mr. Bosman, Dr. Bosman, to determine whether this lady in fact was still keen to proceed if she had all the information, and that information was that she could be required to repay a substantial amount of money and only get a small amount back. Now, I missed the whole process there. I'm not sure what happened since then, before we take a resolution. Thank you.
Last week, we then said it will be unlike Parliament, where you see the disadvantage of advising a person to pay 131 of the 194 she received when she left the system. For her to pay back 131, and because when you remove 131, she would then remain with 52,000, which will be then what was supposed to be gratuity for her. Now we are saying, to us it will be unethical to advise an ordinary citizen to that effect. We thought I'm afraid to preempt what you wanted to discuss. But personally, my feeling was that we don't give her advice to go through. We gave her all the facts. I'm sure the communique has been sent to her to say, if you were to be given the money you are talking about, you would then have to undergo these processes, which in our own view is in your disadvantage area, because you would then pay 131 and continue to get 1,200 monthly. For you to arrive at the 131, nobody will guarantee that you'll ever even get that money. You might happen to terminate your life, or your life might be terminated before you arrive at that particular figure. So we thought we'd advise her not to, but give her an open space to say, if herself feels, despite this advice from Parliament, I'm still feeling I wanted this, then she can do without being advised by Parliament to do that.
No, I think we agree there that the decision at the time was not to ask her, not to advise us from our side. We simply wanted her to get the full picture. Just to finish that argument, was there a response then from her? Nothing from her. Okay.
Any input? Honorable
Kuba? I might have also, as well, I think I missed the last meeting due to not doing well, but the issue that I wanted to say, having followed the discussions and followed what has happened, my understanding was that at the point, if I'm wrong, you'll correct me, my understanding was, as we dealt with the issue, we became aware that some of this information were not available to the petitioner, hence the option of coming to Parliament to seek assistance. And I had a feeling that had this information been available to the petitioner, that you'll be required to pay so much money in order for you to benefit what she wanted to benefit. I had a feeling that she wouldn't have. And therefore, my recommendation here is to give this information to the petitioner and not prescribe as our report, put the report and conclude on the matter, say, this is what is expected to do. Because logically, as individuals, we don't see it really working to say, this is what you need to pay for you to benefit this much. But again, is to, I don't think there is much that you can do on this matter, but just to close it and refer back for her decision in that regard.
I wanted you not to close without saying where do we park it ourselves, because we are expected to give feedback to Parliament.
No, I'm saying, Chair, that's what, maybe I didn't put it correctly. I'm saying that we can't prescribe to the individual to say, go and pay, because I get it based on what we have been presented to and given the information to say she was left with 9 months of the outstanding for her to benefit fully into the package pension fund. And therefore, for her to have the amount that she's expecting, she'll have to pay a certain amount. That was the briefing received and part of the presentation. And I'm saying that we can't, because there are financial implications to an individual, that we can't take a decision to say, therefore we recommend that as an individual, go and pay the money so that you can benefit. But our responsibility where we are is to disseminate the information to the petitioner to say, this is the information we have found as the committee. It is up to the individual to decide, and therefore we close the matter to say we are referring it back to the individual. We can't prescribe to the individual because there are consequences. You can't go back and instruct an institution based on its policies and want to change them as well. I don't know if I'm making sense, Chair. You don't sound like you are hearing what I'm saying.
Because
I'm saying we're closing it in the sense that we are referring it back to the petitioner to say this is what you have as options, and for the petitioner can decide on their own will to take whichever option that they want.
Honorable Mdak.
Thank you, Chairperson. To those members who were not here last week, we never discussed this. So we are in the same level of understanding. Thank you.
Any further?
See, I'm not sure if I'm taking it further, but just a comment. There are two aspects to this thing also, and that is that the department was not very keen on this, because if the department supports this, there will be financial implications for the state.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, there is an indication that they want us to take a decision not to proceed. The second aspect, which is something which bugs me, is the fact that we always say all avenues must have been exhausted by the petitioner. Now, we had legal advice from Gary Roeder also that in this case, not all legal avenues were exhausted. The person did not go the legal route. But then the counter argument was, and it's a very strong argument, that there must be meritorious cases where a person cannot be expected to take the legal route because of the money involved and the economic side of things. And this is a typical case. It's a lady with no money. To expect her to take this through the courts will exhaust all her money, basically, and it's a fruitless exercise. So I'm just putting that on the table, that there's also the angle of our own requirement that all legal avenues must have been exhausted. In this case, it hasn't been exhausted, but there's a counter-argument to that. But can you expect the lady of this financial standing to go the legal route? I don't think we can. There must be exceptions to that requirement.
I think what we'll do then, it will mean we are finalizing it in this fashion, to say we are giving the information to the sponsor to say this is our findings on this particular matter. Therefore, whether you pursue the matter in that particular information, it will be solely your decision. But us as committee, going back to Speaker's Office for Parliament report, it will be to say we couldn't find any reasons for us to pursue the department to reinstate her back into the system, and then as such, we have referred the decision to be taken by that individual based on the information we have provided. Any amendment to that? Do we agree? Thank you very much. Can we then move to the last one, I'm sure, if we will be able. That's the legislative proposal to prohibit contracting between an organ of state in the nation. Yeah, national spheres of governments and companies whose directors are party political office bearers of public representative of political parties. I'm sure the preparation of this thing was not proper. This thing has been forwarded to us by Honorable Davidson. What is the final position of the committee?
Sure, I think we must just get some background again. What happened if we communicate with any other committees about this? Where we're standing with all those comebacks?
I think we sent letters to variety, I'm sure, ethics committee, powers and privileges, justice, presidency, and last week we resent reminders to them to say wanting to conclude the matter today. Would want them to consider sending us their position by Monday. Then we then said failure to do that, it will then make us to assume that we have got nothing to comment. So it will base, you know, on the committee's understanding, and the committee will take a determination without our comment. Like we send them those letters, and to date, we haven't received any. Honorable Kelly.
Just a proposal, Chairperson. What used to assist the committee in the past was that a draft report be compiled, with the steps taken, the process followed, the departments contacted, etc. And then there was a last one, a concluding position of the committee that was left open, or two alternatives given that the committee supports or rejects or whatever. And that was actually very, very helpful, because that sort of focused you to say, this is the process, we executed our mandate in terms of the rules, etc., and now we are at the ultimate position. Have we had adequate indication that there's legislation, impending legislation or whatever, and then we come to a conclusion. Because in some of the cases, we've had, for instance, in the case of the public service, Minister Baloyi informed us about certain legislation that will be introduced, etc. So when we check on our checklist again, it was clear for us that our mandate, we fulfilled it, we've determined this, that, and the following. In this one, we cannot decline it on the basis of being frivolous or vexatious. You know, we don't know unless we have the sort of compiled document before us, if it is going to be preempting similar legislation, etc. So all I'm suggesting is, can we not perhaps ask you that we receive such a combined report, and that we then table it next week and then and put it away. So for today's sitting, if we can then maybe park it and defer it to next week, and then we can deal with the minutes of before we adjourn. That's my proposal. Thank you.
Is there any seconder to the proposal on the table, Honourable Kwan?
Can I request to be excused? I need to rush to another meeting that they've been waiting for.
Is there any contrary view on the defer of the matter to allow the management to compile some kind of a background where we are coming from, where are we in terms of this, and then allow us to debate while we have given you that recapping? Honorable Pistoria.
It's not a contrary view, sir. It's actually in support of the motion. I think it's a very sound proposal. But can I then just ask that when the draft report is compiled, that we do it in conjunction or with the six criteria as background, that we do it in that, with that as a background, because the only criteria that we must consider when we adopt a report or not are really these A to F. So, although there could have been communication with all sorts of other people, that's fine. That can also be reflected, but we must make a final resolution based on one A to F, and that's formed part of the proposal in some way.
I think that's for when one will be having that to say, based on these, I'm saying that, and so on and so on. For now, let's give the management to work on the summary background of what we have done. Thank you, sir. You can be excused. We are almost 2 minutes towards Shaila. We were supposed to finally deal with the minutes of the 19th in particular, the 26th, we received them today. It might be difficult for you to have comment to meaningful input on it. Can we look at the 19th in particular, if you have seen that? Honorable Killian.
Thank you, Chair. I have actually just notified the committee secretary that I, just for the record purposes, I think it would be unfair to say that Ms. Adams is absent without apology. She's an alternate member, so she's not carrying the full responsibility. And therefore, it would not be appropriate. If she was a full member and she's not coming and she's not tendering an apology, then you stipulate it like that. But she's an alternate member, so I just wanted to suggest that we don't record her absence under absent without apology. Cope is entitled to one member. I was unfortunately abroad on a PC for communication, Chairperson, I could not attend, and she had other commitments. But the fact of the matter is, I believe if I'm absent without apology, I can be recorded like that, but not an alternate member.
So to help them, where do you think their name can be put?
At the bottom, absent.
Is
it necessary to record an alternate member? I don't think we record an alternate member at all.
Yeah, no, it's not necessary because the obligation is also, it can also be argued that the member might have not informed the alternate that she's not going to be there. So you can't put the obligation on the alternate member.
Thank you. I think that will be corrected. So that's the first correction to remove. Honorable, on page 2, is there anything that you have observed that require to be amended? Honorable Victoria.
Chief, I apologize. I left my remarks I made in my office now, but I recall what I said here. The third paragraph under the opening remarks, the tour that was not approved for January because of bad weather. I'm not too sure that the tour didn't happen because of bad weather in Canada. The third line, he reported that the study tour was not approved for January because of bad weather in Canada. That must be a little bit reworked. It didn't happen because of bad weather. It happened to be bad weather at the time, but that wasn't the cause of us not going.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't even know whether one have to refer to it at all. We reported the study tour was not approved for January. As the Canadian Deaths indicated, that members from the Senate and House of Commons would only be available from the end of January. Because, I mean, the fact that we as South Africans don't know how to travel in bad weather is not relevant.
Any further on page 2? Page 3? Any mover for adoption? Honorable Mdaga. Seconda? Honorable Mapilu. Thank you. That answer coming from you.
So thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, MRC. So we have accepted your report, and we'll probably meet you next time. We've accepted the report that you've given us, and we'll wait for those questions that are coming. Thank you very much.